Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. Happy Christmas, just a few days away. I don't know how you're feeling. It's so mixed, isn't it, this time of year? It is so, I don't know, it kind of shines a spotlight on whatever might be going on. So if things are tough for you, Christmas just feels so much tougher. And if things are going well, maybe it is all sparkly. I don't know. Usually a few bits of stress and a few arguments thrown in there somewhere, isn't there? For me, it's a whole year since my mum died. She died on the 19th last year. So, you know, it's a really emotional time. And I know so many people who've lost loved ones at Christmas. It's just so difficult not to kind of burst into tears the whole time. So my heart goes out to you if that's, you know, the situation that you're in. And of course, you know, there's loads of people on their own, and there's something about loneliness at Christmas as well. On a happier note, if you are a Sober Club member, we've got a Christmas Eve meetup online. So it'd be lovely to have you drop in on that. Think about joining us if you haven't already. It's, you know, it's not expensive. It's so cheap. It's so low cost, but it's really high value. So do check that out if you'd like some support and connection and accountability and masses of stuff around optimum well-being. And for the show today, I thought I'd share yet more tips. We've done so many tips and ideas, but I've gathered a few little things together in a blog post. So I thought I'd share a few of those just for those people who want the last minute little bits of motivation across the Christmas period, you know, across the next few days and that Twixmas bit, you know, that bit between Christmas and New Year, which is just always weird. And then, as I'm sure some of you are aware, on January the 7th, so we're going to leave it a whole week into the new year, we've got a Setting Your Intentions workshop. So the reason that we're doing that is because from the 1st of January, if you sign up to this little event, this little workshop, I'm going to be sending you various bits and pieces, little prompts, little bits and bobs to think about. And then on January the 7th, which is Sunday, 4:30 p.m. we've got an online workshop, hour and a half to 2 hours, setting your intentions, so letting go of what you no longer need from 23 and setting your intentions for 24. This is not the same as making resolutions. I don't believe in that at all, but it's really just looking ahead in detail, in depth, manifesting what it is you want for the future. So if you haven't yet stopped drinking, it's perfect for you to come along and get real clarity on that. And if you've been sober for ages, then no doubt you've got other many exciting things you want to focus on now. One of the wonderful things about ditching the booze is that it makes us brave and makes us go after other stuff. So we'll be doing all of that. So whatever stage you're at, do check out that event on January the 7th online. If you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you'll find all the information there. And that leads me beautifully into my guest, because I'm going to be chatting with William Porter ahead of our session on the 7th. So William is doing an interview for us for the 7th, because I thought, you know, in addition to looking at what we're letting go of, at the intentions that we're setting, let's get some real logic around how the brain works effectively. Let's get the kind of neuroscience piece in there. So William is going to be doing a session for us on that event as well. But I thought, well, let's get two for the price of one, as it were, and let's share some tips from William on this session, because I know lots of you have heard William speak a lot of times, William Porter, lots of you have read Alcohol Explained, lots of you have heard William on this podcast. So I thought, let's actually get William's take on food, because, you know, that's going to be something that many of us are going to be thinking about quite a lot over the next few days and weeks. So let's get his take on food and how we can possibly make that a little bit healthier. But before we do that, let me throw a few of these little tips at you. I did a few headlines. So you've got a little bullet point bunch of tips just to add to the many that we've already given you over the last few weeks. So this is obviously for you if you are intending to make this a sober Christmas. Perhaps it's your first sober Christmas, or maybe you just want some reminders. So I've just chunked it down into little sections. 10 tips for your happy sober Christmas. So number one is cheers to the mocktails. I think you may have heard me use the phrase, keep the ritual, change the ingredients, and you can literally swap the booze for some awesome mocktails. You can get really creative when you're doing an alcohol-free cocktail. It's really fun, and it's a great thing to do with friends and with family, because actually everyone really loves a mocktail when someone's made it for them, and you can do all that pimping stuff and make it look really pretty. Game on, but sober style. Now, you know, when I was drinking, I used to hate board games. I think probably just kind of held me up from reaching for the next drink, probably something like that. But actually now I realize there's quite a benefit in just playing card games or board games. And if you've got a bunch of people, it can actually be really fun. It's a really fun thing to do without having to have a drink by your side. So the next thing is about being festive, and this is about doing things up, really, and that kind of decorating thing. So I don't know what you normally do at Christmas time, whether you are someone who you may be one of those people that puts all those amazing lights outside the front of your house. I don't know. But whatever it is, just have a few fairy lights. I mean, honestly, it's just amazing how a few fairy lights can lift your spirits. To be perfectly honest, I don't think you can ever have enough fairy lights. That's my take on it. So borrow some. I actually managed to find some really unusual star-shaped fairy lights in a vintage shop. They were not expensive at all, and they're absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure how vintage they are, I haven't said that. Caffeine and kindness is my next one. William is going to share something with us about caffeine, but I've got my fingers firmly planted in my ear, because my tip is keep the coffee and the kindness flowing. You know, it can be tea, of course it can, but actually don't miss out just because it's Christmas time. Don't miss out on just taking yourself out for a nice coffee or meeting a friend and just having a chat. You know, I sometimes find myself at this time of the year, you know, I'll get a text from somebody saying, oh, I'm coming over near where you live and I'm going to be shopping or whatever, and do you want to meet for a coffee? And my immediate thought before I catch myself is, I'm too busy. I've got this to do and that to do and presents to wrap and, you know, sober club stuff I'm working on. And I've just got way too many things going on. I haven't got time to take a pause to go and chat with a friend. Or how ridiculous. Of course I have. We've all got time to do that. So if you have the opportunity, or if you can't meet someone in person, just call someone up, call them on Zoom and sit and have a coffee together. It makes a difference. You know, everyone thinks they're fine on their own. I've got lots of clients that have said to me, oh, I'm good. I'm absolutely fine. But when it comes to it, actually we need connection. All of us need connection. And then my next little tip is DIY sober stockings. And what I mean by that is treat yourself to something. Treat yourself. You know, years ago, I used to feel really kind of fed up that my family didn't get me the gifts that I wanted. I used to get so grumpy about it. It was so pathetic, as if they're meant to be mind readers, you know. Even when I first stopped drinking, I remember having a right old grump for a few months, because I had in my mind that I really wanted something that celebrated my sobriety. You know, I wanted a card or a t-shirt, you know, that said something about sobriety. I wanted something. And I suppose I might have dropped the odd hint, but of course it's not their reality. It's not where they were at. So how were they meant to know what I meant? I remember my husband saying to me, well, I heard you say that you wanted a card that said something about a soberversary, but I went into WH Smith and they didn't have any. Well, of course they didn't. But whose fault is that? You know, it's mine for not making it super clear. By the way, there aren't enough sober cards on the market. So Literally treat yourself, and it doesn't have to be expensive stuff. Buy yourself a couple of gifts and actually put them in a stocking or put them under the Christmas tree. Little things. Just get yourself another Quitlet book. Mine is available, of course, or some little self-care treats, or, you know, some organic skincare. Now that you're not drinking, why would you want alcohol in your skincare, right? Just treat yourself. It can be something really tiny, but treat yourself. Don't wait for everyone else to do it. You're meant to love yourself, right? I know most of us don't, but let's at least create it till we make it. And the next one is mindful munchies. And of course, this is what we're going to be talking about with William, the whole idea of how we can eat a bit more healthily. But the reality is we're going to have some stuff over Christmas, aren't we? It's the way it goes. But just think about those sugar swaps, you know, when you pop the dates in the freezer. Of course, there's loads of them at this time of year. Pop the dates in the freezer. They taste great. They taste like little special little truffly chocolatey thingies. And, you know, you can make lots of really fantastic guilt-free recipes. You really can. Just simple little things. I've got a great blog on the Sober Club called Christmas Treats. So have a look at that. It's got some really nice ideas for munchies that are not difficult to make. But they're just swaps. They still hit the spot, but they're just swaps, because as William, you know, is going to share with us, when you eat too much absolute rubbish, you just don't feel good. So why would you do that? You know, we're not drinking alcohol. We want to feel good. So just, you know, it's about balance, right? Of course, you're going to eat too much. So am I, but it's balance. Let's just throw in some good stuff as well. And then tech timeout is one that I've popped down in this blog post. And, you know, this is going to be the one that's the hardest for me. That's the truth of it. I find it really difficult to put the phone down. Sometimes I even notice that, you know, even if I'm with my family or we're watching a movie, you know, you hole up for a Christmas movie, and there'll be at least one of us on the phone. And sometimes it's me. It's terrible, isn't it, to admit that? It's just awful. But we've really got to put phones down. We've just actually got to step away from screens and connect with the people that we're with. It's a terrible addiction that so many of us have got onto. But over Christmas, just set yourself a little challenge that you're going to want to check your phone and send your messages. That's fine. But set yourself some time, you know, whether it's 20 minutes in the morning and midday and however busy you are, but it's that constant thing. It's the all day thing where it's really not a good idea. So I'm going to try and do that one over the next few days for sure. So that's the tech timer or the digital detox, whichever you want to call it. And then this one is really key. It's gratitude bombs. And what I mean by that is literally do a gratitude bomb, do a dump of gratitude, really spend some time reflecting on what you're grateful for. And if this just sounds so horribly schmaltzy, it really isn't. I'm really not talking about the very obvious stuff. I know you're grateful for your home and your family. I'm talking about all the really tiny things, all the blessings that have come from you having chosen to focus on your optimum health. What have those blessings been? If you've only just ditched the booze, or if you're still sober curious, then you can write down what you're hoping for. So you can be grateful for what you know is going to come from making this really important choice. So gratitude is really everything. And if you are struggling at the moment, if you are feeling a bit anxious, if things are difficult for you, focus on gratitude, because it's literally like the kind of bridge that takes you from where you are into a more of a feeling of balance, and things start to feel okay again when you've got that really intense gratitude. So, you know, make a list, check it twice. And finally, it's JOMO over FOMO. So when we're drinking, or when we are struggling, or we're in the early stages, there's this terrible sense of FOMO. What am I missing out on? What is it? You know, everyone else is having fun. Everyone else is doing X and Y. It's Christmas. Surely the drinks taste better at Christmas. Surely I can't possibly watch the King's speech without a glass of something alcoholic. It's this fear of missing out. Actually, we can literally switch it to JOMO, to the joy of missing out. When we start to focus on the incredible joy that comes from not taking in poison, right? We know we're not missing anything. There is nothing to miss. There are no positives. There are zero benefits to alcohol. Don't let anyone tell you any different. I went for years stuck in this trap. Oh, yeah, but a glass of red wine's good for your heart. Oh, but this absolute BS, all of it. You have nothing to lose, nothing at all. You only can gain. So focus on that joy. Focus on those little things that you might be experiencing or that you're looking forward to. That joy from not drinking, that joy from not waking up feeling hungover, from not being embarrassed about what you might have said, the joy of not having to feel stressed about whether, you know, you've been inappropriate with family members or even just worried about how sluggish you're going to feel. Just don't, you can ditch all of that. It's freedom. It's literally freedom. So if you haven't made this decision yet, I hope this last tip will help you make your decision to ditch the booze if you haven't already. Embrace the joy of missing out. And if you've been sober for years, you know, do a gratitude bomb and a little joyful dance to really celebrate, literally celebrate just how joyful it is to have stopped drinking, because it really is. So let me introduce you to this topic, which is, you know, we do get a little bit serious, but I think mostly we're just trying to help people navigate the Christmas period when it comes to what we put in our mouths. So introducing William Porter. Well, I'm just so excited that I get to speak to William, not once, but twice. William Porter, thank you so much for popping on to chat about the Christmas period. How are you?
I'm very good, Janie. No, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of people listening to this podcast will know your stuff. They'll have read your books, I'm sure. They'll have probably heard you on this podcast and many others. And some Sober Club members, of course, know you very well because you've done some great sessions for us in the Sober Club. But, you know, we're all it's a different time, isn't it? We're all in a different place. So I don't think it hurts to hear some of this stuff again. You know, I'm sure you don't mind sharing. So it's a bit like an artist when you've got that, you know, you've got your massive hit, but, you know, the audience want to hear it, don't they? So you're just going to have to keep doing your hits.
As long as people aren't getting bored with it, that's fine.
Yeah, of course not. But just in case there is somebody who's new to the podcast, just give us a really super quick kind of potted history, you know, of your story and what led you to write these brilliant books.
Yeah, so I started drinking when I was 14, drank best part of, or in fact, more than a quarter of a century. And I stopped drinking, in fact, so February 2024 will be my 10-year soberversary.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
Years.
Yeah. So how amazing.
Drinking when I was, I think it was 38, I stopped. Mm. And it was, so I was a binge drinker. So I was drinking more and more and more when I was drinking, and it was getting more and more unwieldy. And I got to the point, it was quite a low point, to be honest. I sort of crawled out of a sort of a drinking session where I'd been drinking all day, every day, because I used to wake up, drink, fall asleep, wake up, drink again. I've been drinking for about 5 days. I've not been into work. My wife and kids had left. I sort of came out and looked around and there was no one else in the house. So it's quite a low point for me. And at that point, I thought, I just can't keep doing this at all. Mm. And so that was my last drink.
Mm. And then for you, you know, unlike me, you have a very analytical mind. And for you, it was really important, wasn't it, to do the kind of, rather than just go, oh, I think I'll feel better if I stop. You really got into the research and the reasoning behind it all.
Yeah, that was it for me, because I couldn't, like we do with alcohol and indeed lots of other drugs, you know, like smoking, nicotine. But it's that thing that, when you're doing it, you're like, no, this is no good for me, I need to stop. But within a day or two, you're kind of like, yeah, but I still want it. So it was kind of a tug of war. So, well, yeah, I knew on the one hand I was feeling awful, I was waking up, it was, you know, it was impacting my marriage, my job, my everything. But on the other hand, I couldn't quite envisage life without it. I was thinking, well, what's Christmas going to be like without a drink? What's it going to be like going on holiday without a drink? How will I deal with stress without a drink? So it was, I really just wanted to understand it fully, because it was kind of like, felt like I was swaying backwards and forwards all the time between sort of wanting to stop and then wanting to continue. and almost just wanted to do a real drains up with it and just think, hang on, what is this? And why is it I'm going through this? And why do I keep wanting to go back to it? And like you say, just really analyze it and understand it.
And that's really what led to your series of books, because you wanted to share those findings. And I think what's just so helpful for people is that when they get that logic piece really nailed, you know, then when you layer on the motivation, you've got sort of something to base it all on. I mean, would you agree with me that, you know, we do need both? You do need the motivation, but it helps if it's underpinned by that logic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the more you can throw at it, the better. You almost can't have too much, you know, and what works, you know, some people more on the logic, some people more on the motivation. Everybody needs a bit of both in different amounts. But you get, like I say, you almost, the more you can get of everything, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think most people have heard a lot of the stuff that you talk about around alcohol, but we haven't had that many conversations about your diet and fitness book and where food fits into it all. So I thought, as you know, we're all going to be hitting this period of eating too much, basically, let's just dip into a few of those kind of principles. I mean, I'm sure they absolutely do link with alcohol anyway, don't they? A lot of it is actually overlaps. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, 10 years ago plus, I was, you know, I was in the parachute regiment, so I was pretty fit. And actually I'm fitter now and I'm slimmer now than I was then, and you know, a lot of that came from actually stopping drinking.
I know, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, I think we all forget how unbelievably unhealthy drinking is. You know, we so many people focus on diet, but they forget the alcohol piece. I mean, I remember having girlfriends who used to just, that, you know, they wanted to be thin, and so in order to be thin, they would just practically, you know, they would just down their body weight in alcohol. They just have God knows how much alcohol, but not eat. I mean, oh my God, how unbelievably unhealthy is that? You know, at what price being thin, if you even are?
Yeah,
because of course we hear about the beer belly anyway, don't we?
Yeah, and the problem with that, not to get too technical, but it actually makes the alcohol more addictive.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes a drug addictive is how quickly it gets into your bloodstream. If it goes into your blood really quickly, you get that immediate hit. It makes it very much more addictive. And of course, if you're drinking on an empty stomach, that alcohol's hitting your bloodstream that much quicker. So people are far more likely to get into difficulties with alcohol if they're doing that, if they're not eating properly and drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So for anyone who hasn't read Diet and Fitness Explained, I mean, how would you sort of sum up the basics if you have to kind of, you know, share what it is in a few sentences?
Oh, gosh. It was a similar approach to alcohol. It was kind of trying to understand, because to me, it always seemed odd because, you know, like you look at animals, like, and they eat what they're supposed to eat. And they, you know, obviously there's some animals that have body fat on them, but that's for a reason, like seals, to keep them warm. But most animals are slim. They don't have this weight problem that we have. And it seemed odd to me because, you know, most people kind of know that fruit and vegetables are good for you. And, you know, your burgers, your pizzas, your chocolate and all that is bad for you and make you fat. But we seem genetically disposed to want to eat the bad food. I couldn't quite get my head around that. It's almost like if you had a species of animal that just wanted to eat, I don't know, arsenic all the time, something that's not good for them. So Diet and Fitness Explained more about kind of understanding why we're attracted to junk food, fast food, and why we tend not to be so attracted to sort of fruit and vegetables and healthier food. And to do that, I kind of, a lot of it's kind of based on my own analysis of like how it makes me feel, how like flavors, taste, texture when we're eating, how it feels when we've eaten something. Because I think I've mentioned this before, but I think our bodies actually speak to us in quite a loud voice, but we've become very accustomed to tuning that out.
Yeah.
Like with alcohol, if you stop and you eat a bit more consciously and you think, well, okay, what does this actually taste like? How does it make me feel? Your body is actually telling you what you ought to be eating.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so very true. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, you say that we as humans, you know, we were gravitating towards, you know, this rubbish effectively. But the only reason we're able to do that is because it's available and it's so much, such a big part of our society. You know, if you track it back to other cultures or many, many years ago where all of this crap was not available, people ate healthier. I mean, people ate healthier in wartime, didn't they? We often hear that. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that, you know, anyone wants to go back to, you know, rations, of course. No. But actually, people ate less. They ate seasonally, not because they were trying to be trendy, but they ate organically, in inverted commas, and seasonally, because that was what was in their garden or in their local allotment.
Yeah, they were growing
and there were were no strawberries being flown in, so it wasn't a case of, you know, so they ate seasonally, which of course is good for us. Mm-hmm. And they ate what was grown, you know, what was within their food miles, as it were, locally. Yeah. They ate, you know, locally sourced, and it was organic because they simply didn't have the bloody chemicals that are put on stuff now. Yeah, you know, exactly. and kind of everything kind of changed. I don't know. Would you say, late, I don't know, 60s, 70s? Definitely was when an awful lot of food became not food. It just became manufactured produce that isn't really food.
No, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of it is, it's a little bit like with alcohol in a sense. It's because it's bloody everywhere, because ultra processed foods and absolute crap is everywhere. It's very difficult to go against the tide and not eat that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And you hear, you know, like I heard someone at work today saying he's tries to avoid fruit because of all the sugar in it.
Oh, for God's sake. I know.
How wrong can you get things?
Yeah. I know. But it is hard at this time of the year. I mean, we can't deny that everything feels in excess at this time of year. And, you know, there's so many traditions, and well, alcohol is one thing, we know about that, but then you laden on top of that, you know, oh, I can't possibly open presents without, you know, 100 weight of Quality Street or whatever, and I can't, you know, I can't even take the Christmas tree down unless I've got, you know, a chocolate orange or whatever the hell it is. So how do we, you know, how do we kind of keep our enjoyment and our traditions, if you like, and yet, you know, not completely overeat?
It is difficult. I think one of the things for me was starting to understand that when you've eaten something, when you're no longer hungry, food kind of stops being enjoyable. Mm. You kind of get to that point where you're almost
rather like alcohol, in fact.
you're kind of eating it just because it's there. Or certainly I used to get to the point where, you know, there'd be a few chocolates left and I just couldn't leave them, and it was almost like the same thing as craving alcohol. It's just that noise in your head, and you know the easiest way to get rid of it is just to eat the damn thing, and then you could stop thinking about it. And it's to try and get away a bit from that. And I think for me, it was kind of like understanding that if I've eaten and I'm starting to get full, it's no longer pleasurable. And it's trying to identify, you know, an item of food that's really enjoyable if you're hungry. No item of food is enjoyable if you're full. And, that's, you know, right, the goal in life really is to enjoy it, to have a nice time. But if you're overeating, it's not particularly pleasant. It's quite frustrating.
Yeah.
And one of the big things for me was understanding how that actually impacts sleep. Because, as you know, when you stop drinking, you get fantastic sleep eventually. Yeah. And it's one of the great feelings is to wake up feeling very well rested. One of the big things that spoils me resting and sleeping properly these days is if I eat too much the night before. Because, of course, well, there's a few things. But when you eat something, it has to travel through something like 20 foot of digestive tract. And your muscle is squeezing it. There's muscles in the digestive system that squeeze it every inch of the way. So actually eating takes a huge amount of energy. Mm. If you eat a lot of food, your body's going through this massive digesting process, which disturbs your sleep. And of course, when the food is broken down to energy, a significant amount of it becomes heat energy. Now, when you sleep, your body temperature has to drop, I can't remember, 2 or 3 degrees before you can sleep. If you cannot drop your body temperature, you cannot sleep. Mm. But if you're eating a lot late at night, you're waking up in the night, you're ruining your sleep, and you're feeling kind of washed out and tired the next day. I don't know if you've heard people say this, but they say, well, you know, like I went out the other night, didn't drink, but I almost felt like I was hungover the next day.
Yeah.
There's many different reasons for that, but one of it is eating too much too late and just that feeling of not having slept properly. So I think kind of understanding that, you start to think, you know what, that 15th mince pie isn't quite so tempting as I originally thought it was.
Yeah, totally. And I think, as you said before, it's about being mindful of it, isn't it? And just being mindful that, you know, of course you can have a mince pie, of course you can have a treat, but be mindful that if you have too many, you're going to feel crap. And that it's not rocket science, is it? If you put really real rubbish stuff in, you're not going to feel good. But it's amazing how we forget that.
So everybody's going to eat too much over Christmas. Yeah. Okay, that's just a given. And you're probably going to start January thinking, I'm a bit overweight and I need to lose the weight. The less you eat, because this is the trouble, the mentality often is, I'm going to have to diet in the new year anyway, so I might as well sort of make the most of it. But the more you eat now, the harder it is in the new year to lose the weight, because you've got more weight. So start looking at it a slightly different way. Instead of saying, well, I might as well just eat away because I'm going to have to diet in the new year, start to saying to yourself, well, every bit of food I don't eat is making it easier in the new year for me to diet. So if you start the new year half a stone overweight, that's better than starting it 3 stone overweight.
Yeah. And, you know, even people who don't need to lose weight or are not thinking about losing weight, it really is the way that food impacts mood that I think is really, really worth remembering. And you know, I'm sure I've shared this before, but, you know, years ago when my mum was alive, and she always suffered from mental illness, but physically she was always very well. And then she came to see us one Christmas time. I really thought she was not going to make it till Christmas. I seriously did. I took one look at her and she just looked absolutely awful. To cut a very long story short, because the kids were really young, we're like, oh, come on, grandma, let's make a cake or something. And they kind of got her cooking and eating. And she kept saying, no, I don't want anything. I'm fine. And we gave her a full meal anyway. And honestly, it was literally remarkable. I so wish I'd videoed it, because within 3 days, literally, well, maybe even 2 days, she literally she was looking vibrant. She'd come alive again. She looked 20 years younger. Now, of course, it was lovely that she was around the grandchildren. I get that piece. But basically, she'd not been eating. It's really as simple as that. She'd been, you know, having half a tin of something and a biscuit. She'd done that thing that old people do sometimes, just not nourishing herself properly, you know, having a couple of cream crackers or whatever the hell. And it was literally in front of my eyes. I saw the power of food to heal. Yeah. And we so often forget this. And when we get down and anxious or depressed or overwhelmed, we forget. And what we do is, of course, naturally reach for the sugar, which will exacerbate all of that. Yeah. Whereas actually, by having really nutritious food, it raises our vibration. It's so important. It really is. It is incredible. And I think anybody who's, you know, going through anything, because Christmas is such a difficult time, isn't it? And there are so many people who won't be having a perfect Christmas, right?
I think that's so true. Yeah.
And yet they've still got to eat well. That doesn't mean you have to have 1,000 chocolates, but eat really well, because when you eat well, you don't have the space to put all the rubbish in either.
Very true. Yeah, make sure. Or like we were told as youngsters, always eat your vegetables first.
Exactly. I know all of it. I mean, we all know this stuff, as you say, but we find ourselves, you know, going against what we know. Just touching on the sugar, because, you know, there will be people who are kind of thinking, well, you know, I'm doing all right. I'm not, this is my first sober Christmas or whatever. And I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling strong. I've got my toolkit in place. I know what I'm going to do. But I have got this absolute sugar monster raging, you know. In fact, I spoke to someone who's been sober for a couple of years, but still the sugar thing is big. So tell us, you know, a bit about your take on that and how you address that in the book.
Okay, so obviously there's naturally occurring sugars like in fruit, and there's processed, like fine sugar, which is stuff we get in cakes and chocolate and all the rest of it. Now, your body is designed to deal with natural sugar. And when natural sugar goes into your body, it's released quite slowly, and your body releases insulin. And what insulin does is it takes the sugar and it converts it into energy. So it's quite a slow process, because natural sugar takes a fairly long time to get into your bloodstream, and it slowly builds up, and then it stays there for a while and the insulin removes it. Because the refined sugar, one of the big differences between refined sugar and natural sugar is the refined sugar goes into your bloodstream really quickly. So what your body does is it releases a load of insulin to remove the sugar, but because it's not being absorbed slowly, it's suddenly all gone. So the insulin's there gobbling up the sugar and it's suddenly all disappeared. So you then go into a real slump afterwards because it drains all the sugar out of your blood. So you start to feel like really tired and lethargic. And of course, you know, like drugs, the easiest way to get rid of that feeling is to have a load more sugar, because the reason you're feeling like that is because you've got too much insulin. So the short term effect of having too much sugar, or having too much refined sugar, is that massive slump you get afterwards. And of course, the long term effect is diabetes.
Yeah.
Because what happens is your brain's creating insulin because of this massive sugar intake. Suddenly there's no sugar there. So it starts to get very confused about what to do. And eventually it just gives up and stops producing the insulin because it seems to be causing more problems than it's solving.
Yeah.
And that's when you have these massive problems. To go into a little bit more detail as well, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, diet drinks don't help.
No, absolutely. Don't get me started, William. Don't get me started.
Because they've only got sugar in them, they taste sweet. And, you know, your brain triggers the insulin release, not just when it senses a spike in sugar in your blood, but when you're eating something sweet.
Yeah,
so you actually make the whole problem worse. Because
it's not even food, so your body does not know what the hell to even do with it.
Your brain's producing insulin and there's no sugar actually going into your system.
Yeah. God, yeah. So what would your, you know, I know it's, you know, we haven't got hours, but you know, in a couple of sentences then, where do we start if someone is really got those sugar cravings? I mean, there's lots of things we can kind of do to support nutritionally, but what would your kind of top tips be?
I would say try to steer towards natural sugars like fruit. And you might think, oh God, that's, you know, what a horrible idea. But actually, you know, like oranges, strawberries, satsumas, they taste good. There's such a massive range of fruits. It's, you know, it's virtually impossible to think of all the fruits out there. You can't find something you like. And try to steer yourself onto that. Because as I say, there's the two very substantial downsides to refined sugar is that massive drop you go into.
Yeah.
Also the long-term health issues it can cause you. I mean, to say nothing of the weight gain, which is obviously another effect.
Yeah. And it's as we were saying before, isn't it? When you actually pause and remember just how awful it made you feel, you can become much more mindful of knowing what's good for you.
Yes.
I mean, so much of this just tracks back to stuff we talk about all the time, which ultimately, once you stop drinking, you're more able to focus on self-care and actually recognize, you know, well, hold on a minute, I'm worth it, I better look after myself. Yeah. When we're drinking, we don't care about ourselves, right?
No.
But when we stop, you know, we go, because, you know, if I want to take care of my body, why would I want to keep piling in yet more toxins?
Yeah. And alcohol makes it very, very hard to control what you're eating, because it is an appetite stimulant. It makes you hungry.
Yeah.
And it may seem people often trying to struggle with that, because they think, well, alcohol is, how can it be an appetite stimulant when it's a sedative?
Mm.
But the answer to that is because your body takes up a lot of energy to digest, you're naturally triggered to be hungry when you're sat down and resting. That's why when the adrenaline kicks in, you're exercising, whatever, your appetite goes down, people aren't hungry. It's when they sit down and rest. So when you take a sedative, a drug that makes you feel really relaxed, it actually increases your appetite. So you take something that's making you falsely hungry.
Yeah.
So it makes it incredibly difficult to try and diet if you're drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, William, it's fantastic to chat to you. The book is really good. You explain it, you know, lots of people have heard me say before, you know, I know that I've done a lot around nutrition, but I think that you explain it super well, and you know, you make it really, really clear. So thank you for that. Now, the last time we met, when you did my live podcast,
right,
you slipped in right at the end that you were writing a book on stopping caffeine. Oh my God. Please tell me you've ditched the idea.
Still a work in progress, Janie, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah. God. Really. Oh, seriously? You're going to actually take away my one, you know, my one little advice? Oh, for God's sake. Seriously. Come on. You better just give us a tease. Is it really bad then? Is it? Can we come? Seriously? Can I not have any coffee?
No. It's of all of them, it's obviously not the worst of them. Okay. So it's definitely not as bad as nicotine, alcohol.
I suppose it depends how much you have it. I mean, I don't believe that with alcohol. I believe that all alcohol is toxic and even one glass is harmful, end of. And obviously with food, we have to have some food, so that's okay. But with coffee, you're telling me, you know, maybe it is about the amount, is it? She says, desperately trying to claw something back.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I want to tell you this, but the problem with caffeine is you do become used to it quite quickly. So they've done studies where they've got people who don't drink caffeine, and they give them some caffeine and they try and get them to sleep, and they can't sleep, surprise, surprise. And they do that for night 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. By about the fourth or fifth night, they're actually able to sleep with the caffeine. But what happens is, although they're asleep, they find it very, very hard to get into deep sleep. Okay.
Right,
so that's
okay.
First point to bear in mind. Secondly, caffeine's got a very long half-life. So the half-life of a drug is when you consume it and it drops to half the amount that was in your bloodstream. So nicotine's quite quick. It's 2 hours. Caffeine's 5 hours.
Oh, my God.
If you have a cutoff of like midday, if you're drinking, say, a 100 milligram cup of coffee at midday, you've still got about 25 milligrams in you by the time you go to bed at 10 o'clock at night. Mm. So even if you're kind of limiting what caffeine you have, it's still going to be in your system. You might find it very easy to go to sleep, which is absolutely fine, but it is detracting from the actual quality of sleep that you get.
Wow. But you see, the answer is not decaf coffee. Well, I would say it isn't, because a lot of the actual decaffeination process is terrible.
Yeah, they use quite a powerful chemical, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, you can get the Swiss, there is a way of doing it. There's a Swiss water-based decaffeination process, which some companies use. But as a general rule, if you went into a coffee shop and just got a decaf, you're getting a shed load of chemicals you don't need.
Yeah, it's not the best solution. The other thing just to mention with caffeine as well, which is I personally found this, and this might not be true for anyone else, but so I would drink caffeine in the morning and cut it out in the afternoon. I would get incredibly tired in the afternoons. So I'd have that nice boost in the morning, but the afternoons, particularly by the time the evening came, I was quite tired. And I just put it down to a hectic lifestyle. And I like to exercise. So now 47 years old, so I was thinking, well, you know, I'm bound to be tired in the afternoon. Having cut out caffeine, I'm not tired in the evenings.
Wow. Have you cut it out completely then?
Yeah, I've cut it
out. Oh, William, your body is a temple.
People often think, oh, you're cutting out all these things for health reasons, but for me it's just quality of life. And the reason I'm not going back to it is because, you know, like,
you feel better.
I just feel better. You do miss that initial boost in the morning, but then your level for the rest of the day, I don't have that real droop in the afternoon anymore.
Fascinating stuff. Well, okay. Well, we look forward to that when it comes out. I'll have you back on, and I'll try and argue for a bit. Oh, there you go. Anyway, William, thank you so much, and look forward to speaking with you on our New Year session. And thank you for some of those tips. We may as well just accept that most of us are going to overeat, but you know, we can have some of this stuff in the back of our mind, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, William.
My pleasure. Thanks, Janie. Bye.
Thank you, William. So as we've already said, it is about balance. I don't expect anybody to be a complete saint or angel over the Christmas period, but let's just bring some balance back. And William is going to be part of, we've recorded an interview that's going to be part of our workshop on January the 7th. So I hope some of you can join us for that. You will receive, if you sign up for that, there's a tiny fee which goes to the Sober Club Give Back Fund. But if you can't pay, it's absolutely fine. Just let me know. It's fine. But it's going to be a 2-hour workshop, or 1.5 to 2-hour workshop. And we're going to include some tips from William, because we're going to look at the kind of logic piece as well as all the manifesting and what it is we want to focus on for the future. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll see the info there for that event on January the 7th. Really hope that some of you can join us. While you're in the events section, by the way, there's an event coming up in Manchester organized by Andy from After Party, one of my sober coaches that I trained. Andy is hosting that event at Love From in Manchester. That's on the 21st of January, and I'm really looking forward to speaking at that, being one of the speakers there. And then in February, February 25th, we're going up to York to do Family Constellations. So excited to go back to York. So you can't say I never get up north. I finally am getting out of the south for a bit. So it would be amazing if you want to join us there. There'll be other events announced soon. We're going to have another live podcast recording, and there'll be another retreat on the cards very soon as well. But for now, all that remains is for me to say, just have a wonderful Christmas. Stay connected, please. I know I've said, you know, everyone should think about a bit of a digital detox, but that doesn't mean, you know, you can't connect with us in the Sober Club. You can't drop someone a message. If you're doing this, if it's your first Sober Christmas, tell someone. You can absolutely tell me. Follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. I'm easy to find. Drop me a message. I'll hold that vision for you. Have yourself a fantastic Christmas, and I will see you same time next week.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.